Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And here we go again. This is Jay Taft with your weekly sports podcast, Not Just a Game. We've been reaching out during this pandemic and really trying to get guests that are hitting home and kind of bringing these times right to the forefront and kind of helping us through a little bit as well. It's not just sports and what's going on the field, it's what's going on off the field, what we're dealing with in life. We've got a great story for you today. This is a young gentleman named Anthony Billups, who was a star Hananiga High School pitcher back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And he's just got such an interesting story. He went on to pitch through college, had a car accident, lost his sight for a while. While he was blind, he learned or fell in love with his artistry as well as playing the guitar. And he's now since grown into a rising star in Nashville, a professional artist and a musician who plays weekly on Broadway Street when we're not locked down for this coronavirus. But just such a neat story of how he got to where he's at and the success story that he is now. So we've got Anthony Billups as our guest for this week's podcast. Now, it took a while to break down this story. It's so cool. So I'm breaking it into two chapters. So we have the first chapter of the Anthony Billups story, which is here coming up right now. And that breaks down his pitching days that started in Hananiga and took him through college and gets us through the accident where he lost his sight and how he started to mold into what he's going to become in the future then and what he is now. So this is chapter one. Chapter two will be coming shortly. But this is a half an hour of the chapter one of Anthony Billups' story. So here we go. Let's drop in on that discussion right now. Talk with Anthony Billups and bring him in right now. Anthony, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I am hanging in there, and I'm really looking forward to getting your story out there and letting people hear what an exciting life you've lived and some of the stories. I'm sure as some of this stuff was going on, it didn't seem all that exciting like some of the stuff that started things off. But you've got some amazing stories, and I want to hear them all. So before we get into what you're doing in Nashville, because you've just gotten back out and were able to sing. You even told me on Broadway here recently, you got back out, sing and perform. Before we get into all that, let's flash back and go back to your Hananiga or to your pitching days that started at Hananiga, and walk us through a little bit of your life as a Hananiga pitcher and a little bit beyond there, and give us an idea of how you became you.
Well, I at a young age just fell in love with everything sports, when I got to Hananiga, I was starting to grow, and starting to throw hard. I got to play JV as a freshman, and I got to play varsity as a sophomore. And then just fell in love with, throwing the baseball. The more we did it, the harder I seemed to throw. Then I wanted to be a professional baseball player and wanted just to throw baseballs for my life. And that, it all started there under Coach Broderick at Hananiga. We had a great team. We had a great group of guys. And we were actually the very first Hananiga High School team to win a regional. So my senior year, that was our crowning achievement. Mm. And yeah, man, my whole life was built on playing baseball.
Now, I've never asked, how hard were you throwing back in high school? Did you have clocks on you back then? I think you did, right?
Yeah. I was throwing in the 90s, you know, topping out in the 90s here and there. And I had to, it took me a while to learn how to control it. I'm not sure if I ever really did. I'm sitting here talking about not playing anymore, you know? So I just kind of threw hard and just let her rip. I mean, that was, I look back on it and the art of pitching was, I didn't really start learning that until I got into college, you know, and in high school, you're young and I just wanted to throw hard. I wanted to pop mitts.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted all the glory. And of course, as you get older, you learn to pull back on the reins a little bit, but I was very much rock and fire at Hananiga.
That's kind of the route for a lot of guys is when you're young, you know, and a lot of times you'll throw your arm right out as well. You didn't have any issues, any injury issues in high school, anything like that. You were able to rock and fire, as you say.
About 15, 16 years old is when I, you know, really started to take it seriously. So, I didn't go out on the weekends, you know, I just was baseball all the time. So every night, I would work out. We had a little gym in our basement. I would, every weekend, my father and I, we'd drive to Crystal Lake. They had an indoor pitching tunnel there in Crystal Lake. So, you know, I started taking it seriously and started learning how to not only pitch, but how to keep myself in shape. I was a big kid, so I never had any kind of arm problems or injury issues until we'll get into it, about after my sophomore year of college.
You were, I see listed at 6'2", 220 back in your high school days. Does that sound right?
That's big boy.
Okay, yeah, that's a big dude up on the mound. Do you remember a record? Do you have a record? Were you like 101 through high school?
I probably held the record for strikeouts and walks at the same time there for a while. Probably still have the record for hit batsmen. I mean, I just, like I said, man, it's like close your eyes and throw it.
Fun to watch. Now walk us through.
I'm not sure if I'm on the if I still have the hit batsman record, but I don't know who would top it.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm the reporter. I should be looking that stuff up. Okay. I'll see what I can find.
I was throwing at all those boiling kids. You know what I mean? You just feel it boiling.
Yeah, there's still a rivalry even nowadays. There, I think. Yeah. I don't know if you started it or not, but we don't.
It's been going on for a while.
Yeah, I think. So walk us through a little bit. You had mentioned to me before that your kind of mindset was at that point you wanted to be a big league pitcher and you were going to go whatever route it took to get you there from there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I ate and slept and breathed baseball. So the plan for me was, you know, in high school, obviously colleges were reaching out and a lot of, professional teams were reaching out. And so in my family at that time, no one had ever gone to college. So it started becoming, you know, if you get drafted, And you get signed to a signing bonus and then you don't, it doesn't pan out. All of a sudden you're in your 20s and you go back to school. What's the case? So when the professional team started reaching out, with my parents, you know, when they asked, what would it take for you to get drafted? Our caveat was, that in my signing bonus or in my contract or whatever, that if my career didn't pan out, that they would have to fund me going to school somewhere. And so basically you're asking for a huge signing bonus when I just told you I could throw hard, which a lot of people couldn't do. but I didn't have the greatest of control. And so, you know, I think that was probably asking for a lot, which I don't regret. And so we didn't get I didn't get drafted. You know, I think at that price, you'd have to be like a top 20, top 15 rounds. And I wasn't that good at that time. And so when I didn't get drafted, if you go to a Division I school, you'd have to wait till after your junior year to get drafted. But if you go to junior college, you can get drafted after your first year, second year. So I went to, at that time, right before I was making that decision, David Seifert was one of the coaches at NIU. So I'd gone to a couple of camps at NIU. One of them, I met Dave Stewart. If you remember Dave Stewart, it was really cool. Mm-hmm. A fun fact. And Seifert had just gotten the head coaching job at Parkland College. So that's where I went. I went to Parkland, played there, you know, for the first year. We had a really successful season. We won a JUCO national championship, but it was just, there were just so many really great players on that team, obviously. And, Coach Seifert and I, didn't see eye to eye on some things. You know, I have my beliefs and I'm pretty convicted within those. And, I came back and, through a couple phone calls, a guy that had recruited me, I think he was up at like UW Platteville or Parkside or something. He had gone down to Lincoln Trail College in Robinson, Illinois. So I transferred there my sophomore year. And then that's the big story.
That's in Robinson, Illinois?
Yeah, Robinson.
Okay. Yep. And then how was that season? Was that a successful season for you?
Yeah. You know, that was the year that I really started to learn how to pitch and how to attack hitters and, not worry about, throwing hard as opposed to learning my locations and throwing strikes. And really learning how to compete within the strike zone instead of always trying to throw the perfect pitch. And so towards the end of that year, I really came on strong and was really just – it was the best I'd ever played. And then we got – I can't remember why, but our coach gave us a day off. And then, so myself, Josh Burt, who was my catcher, and Tyler Evans, who was a second base shortstop, we decided we were going to go to Terre Haute, Indiana, to watch a movie.
Yeah.
We didn't have practice. And then we got in a really bad car wreck. And it just kind of altered the entire path of my life.
Oh, my goodness.
We didn't know it at the time. But I didn't get to pitch in the playoffs because I had gotten this really huge goose egg and my neck was all jacked up. So I didn't get to pitch anymore. But then I'd come down to Nashville. They had a wood bat summer league that consisted of, you know, semi-pro players, college players. And I came down here, my first trip to Nashville, and was really throwing well. I was pitching well, and, you know, I'm playing against guys that are, you know, some of them played pro ball, and I just was, it felt like everything was going in the right direction. And then out of nowhere, my father had come down on a Friday because we were going to go to, Morehead State University. Mm-hmm. And Morehead State had offered me a scholarship, and we went there to visit, and I was right at the beginning of June, and I was having just the worst headaches right behind my eyes. That week prior, I'd been really tight in my hamstrings. I didn't know why. My back was really tight. It was weird. And then so on the way to Morehead State, I just told my dad, I'm like, look, man, I have this headache. I don't know what's going on. And so we were at Moorhead that Friday and that Saturday. Came back on Sunday. My father, he was going on a trip. He worked at Life Touch Publishing in Love's Park. And he was going out of the country to look at some like printing machines or something like that, printing presses. And that Sunday he was like, hey, go to Lens Crafters tomorrow morning and just have them check your eyes, because my vision was starting to go blurry and it was getting worse. And so I went into Lens Crafters on a Monday. And at that point, my catcher, Josh Burt, was also down here playing. And he was more or less having to hold my hands and walk me through the mall to get to Lens Crafters. Because I could only see about 5 or 6 feet around me. Like my vision was just closing in. And so I got the Lens Crafters, and the eye doctor there dilated my pupils, and he was just like, I got to send you somewhere else. So he sent me to an ophthalmologist. I went to an ophthalmologist. He dilated my pupils and was like, I got to send you somewhere else. He sent me to a neuro-ophthalmologist. And that was on Tuesday. I met with a neuro-ophthalmologist. He looked at my eyes and he was like, you've got some fluid buildup on your optic nerve. I need you to get, we're going to have to, you know, admit you in the hospital and run tests. So on Wednesday, June 6th, 2003, I'll remember it forever. I literally was put in the hospital. And I flat could not see. I had lost 100% vision out of my right eye and like 85% out of my left. So I just like, and the whole time is just pounding headache right behind my eyes. Literally there's fluid buildup on my eyes. So I was here in Nashville by myself. My mother, you know, trying desperately to get here. My father's overseas. And I just before that, I had gone to Chambers Guitars, which is like a, you know, they've been around for 40 years in Nashville. And I just bought my first, you know, actual guitar. I had my guitar and I had my CDs and my Discman, you know, and I just alphabetized my CDs. So I knew that Garth Brooks was in the front, you know what I mean? I could kind of finagle my way through the CDs and, you know, started playing guitar as I was alone in the room and you know, trying to just some kind of peace and then for the next six days I was in the hospital, all sorts of tests, nerve tests, the spinal tap. I don't know if you've ever heard the joy of a spinal tap.
Yeah, I've had one.
I had one of those. Yeah. And they kept, there was a lot of debate. They were bringing a neurologist, the neuro-ophthalmologist that I was telling you about. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
The neuro-ophthalmologist I was telling you about, they come in and they were debating, is it, you know, is it a spinal meningitis? Is it a viral meningitis? Is it a virus? And then the neurologist came in, and I'll never forget, my mom had just gotten there. And of course, my mother is terrified because nobody can tell us what's going on. Mm-hmm. And the neurologist came in, and he was saying, you know, I had another MS patient, another MS and MS, and he kept saying MS. And I just said, you know, what's MS? Why do you keep saying MS? And he said, well, I believe you have multiple sclerosis. And my mom was like, well, she had asking questions. She says, you know, isn't that hereditary or something like that? And he was really cold. I'll never forget. He said, well, it's got to start somewhere. And she could feel, what was going on in my mind. And she said, you know, well, look, he plays baseball. If, you know, if he has MS, you know, will it impact that? And he said, you know, I don't think you'll ever play baseball again. So, you know, it was devastating, you know, fighting back tears here, from 18 years ago. But so my mom, to her credit, man, I tell you, she could feel like kind of how I'm feeling now, you know, and she just grabbed my arm and she said, Anthony, don't listen to him. You know, she's like, look at your little brother. They told, you know, us that Nick would never walk. He'd never talk. Look at him now. I'm not going to allow you not to play baseball again, you know, and my mom is tough as nails. So it's, sub story, my little brother is a four-time, I think, Special Olympic gold medalist. He competed in the Special Olympics out of Harlem High School.
In what event?
The 50-meter dash and the standing long jump and the softball throw.
And what's his name?
Nick Billups.
I wonder if I've done a story on him in the past. I mean, when was that? When was he competing?
Or so is he still? It would have been about the same time. So that actually the weekend that I was in the hospital, he was competing in I think it was either Illinois State or I think it was in Bloomington. I think they had like the sectionals or something like that for Special Olympics. And so he was competing. You know, mom came down to be with me. My grandfather, Papa Dickie, he had driven up to Bloomington to be there with Nicholas. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was also just for me being the athlete and for Nicholas competing, like missing his big moment was terrible. But you know, that's what my mom said, and I'll never forget that. So they just
How long was your sight out for?
Yeah, so basically they put me on medication, some kind of optical steroids. I would take and basically I would take all this medicine and just sleep. I'd get up to eat and just go right back to sleep because I couldn't see. You know, I had these headaches. And if I got hot or if I started trying to do anything, you know, it would get worse. So I just laid around for a couple of weeks. My mom just cooked food and took care of me, here in Nashville. And, so for about 2 or 3 weeks, it was gone. And then for the ensuing couple of months, after that, any time that I would get hot or work out or do too much physical activity, it would start to get blurry, you know, so I'd stop. So it was really kind of that summer. I remember, you know, after it started coming back, I tried to go back out and pitch because Tennessee Tech school down here was offering me a scholarship. And I had, at this point, I had to kind of show everybody, hey, you know, this is a fluke thing. I could still play. And I went out and I was throwing the first inning was the first two guys. I struck out and was just throwing great. But I could feel it. It was my vision was starting to go down. You know, I was an athlete, you know, so I'm trying to play through it, right? So here I am trying to pitch, and I can't see. I already told you I had the hit batsman record, you know what I mean? But I threw one. Nick Hyder was catching, and I pitched, and he threw one back to me, and I put my glove up, and it just hit me right in the chest. And so I was done. And so that was the end of that season. I came back to Rockford to live with my parents. And I remember we went up to like Summerfest or something like that to watch music. And I had to try to sneak up front so I could really see. And so really kind of battled that through the summer. So Eastern Illinois University called. They still wanted to offer me a full ride. I had to go to a doctor who had to sign a note saying, I believe that he'll be able to play. And so, you know, they still offered me the scholarship. But I didn't, for the first time since I was 14, 15 years old, I hadn't worked out. You know, I didn't work out that whole summer because I couldn't.
Right.
We did more tests. We got other opinions. I had to go back every 3 months, 6 months, then every year. And they would run more tests to basically disprove the multiple sclerosis theory. And but anyway, I went down to Eastern. You know, I wasn't in that greatest shape because I hadn't worked out. I still had a pretty decent fall. And then in the winter, we were doing all these kind of like, look at some schools, your everybody's strength and conditioning coordinator is the same. The football players, the basketball players, the baseball players. And the pitching, you know, more so than anything, the very specific kind of workouts, you know, it's not big muscles. It's the twitch muscles. It's the ligaments. It's the, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And they had us doing some like just football workouts, and I'd never done them, but I'm a competitor. So, and they have us listed who can bench this and squat that and, you know, hang clean this and, you know, and all these things that are really bad, honestly, for baseball or for a pitcher. And we were just doing them, and I ended up injuring my back and tried to play through that injury, already messed up from this big life experience that had just happened. And just mentally, it was just, I was down. You know, I was just not, in retrospect, the only thing that I would have done differently in regards to that is I would have sat out a year. I ended up getting a medical red shirt anyway, but, you know, it just, it didn't go down that great. I ended up, you know, I didn't concentrate on school. I was just, you know, I was not in a good place, and ended up getting kicked off the team. It was kind of like a mutually agreed kind of thing there towards the end of the season, and got my medical red shirt and came back to Rockford that summer. And was just talking to my father. These two schools in Nashville had reached out. Cumberland University and Trevecca Nazarene University, both NAIA schools. And I just, I really liked the coach, Woody Hunt. He just seemed like he was a guy that could, you know, help me get back to being who I was. And they were the best NAIA, one of the best NAIA programs in the nation. So I signed with Cumberland. And when I got down here, you know, it's my fourth school in 4 years. So my first day I meet with the guidance counselor, and he said, you know, what do you want to do for school? And I said, well, honestly, I just want to be done. I just, whatever I can do in my 2 years and I get a degree, that's it. At that point, they had just released a some study that said 90% of college graduates go into a field that they didn't study. Mm-hmm. So I figured whatever I can get done in 2 years, and then I'll go get a job in sales, you know, and that'll be what I do if I don't play pro ball or whatever, which at this point, you know, that seems so far away. So my guidance counselor, he's sitting there, I felt like he was at the computer for an hour, you know, because he's trying, none of my transfers, you know, credits will transfer. He's trying to line it up. And he said, Anthony, the only thing you can get done in 2 years is art. And I'm like, I'm going to get a degree in art. Okay. Like, I'll spend the next 2 years drawing pictures, whatever, you know what I mean? We get into that year, and you know, here I am, this big jock, you know, that's an art major, you know. There were six of us. It's a small school. Mm-hmm. And I just fell in love with painting. I had done a painting.
And you had no history of it before that?
I'd taken art classes. You know, I took an art class my freshman year. And I always loved drawing. You know, I was just and to back up, one of the things when I was in the hospital that I had thought to myself, you know, was, am I ever going to be able to draw again? I kind of, you know, I realized how much I loved it. Uh-huh. And, but so I got into painting and drawing, and then Coach Hunt, to his credit. And I think this is what separates Coach Hunt, from a lot of, college coaches, is that he had this ability to find out what you were good at and encourage you to become great at it. You know, he wanted you to work to be great at whatever it was, baseball, this, that. And I'll never forget, he came up to me, he said, "Anthony, can you paint?" And I said, "Well, coach, yeah, I can paint." And he said, "Well, I really want to do something special for the seniors this year. Can you paint paintings of their jerseys?" Mm. And I said, "Sure." He said, "I'll pay you $100 a painting." And there were 15 seniors. So by golly, he cut me a check for $1,500. I was rich. You know, I was like, "Oh man, let's go out tonight, guys." You know, but he was teaching me. I didn't know it at the time. He was teaching me how to make money.
Yeah, and
how to become great as an artist. And and then, you know, I had done a self portrait. That's everybody in art college does a self portrait, and it was my first painting, and I set it on the front porch of the art house, and this guy drove by and saw it, and he came in and commissioned me, paid me $500 to do a painting. And you know, little did I know that this was kind of putting me on the path of learning how to be a professional artist. You know, I came by it honestly.
That was it. That was the path then.
Yeah.
On the path.
I played two more years of baseball. I never really was able to recover mentally. I think, you know, those last 2 years, every time I stepped on the mound, I wasn't competing against the guy I was competing against. I was competing against my mind and my head and my past and my experiences. And it would all just kind of come back. And, you know, after my very last game, I knew it was going to be my last game playing. Of course, it was emotional. And I was crying. My father, who is kind of our thing, you know, he put his arm around me and he said, "Man, you can see." And it put everything into perspective, you know.
Nothing else matters, man.
yeah. And so, as terrible as that experience was, you know, the pain of, you know, my dreams not coming true then, mm-hmm. you know, I'm actually really grateful for it, because I feel like I have an incredibly unique perspective in life. I'd already had it from growing up with my little brother, and then having this huge thing happen. So after that, after college, I graduated. And, you know, I didn't think anything about art and music. Of course, I wanted to do it. I loved doing it. But it was, how can I make money?
Right.
How can I get a career? And so I got a job in sales, quickly rose to the top of a really competitive company, nationwide company, worldwide company, actually. And I was the hot recruit. I was a young guy. You know, I came in with that athletic background. And, you know, was started to make really good money, had a salary and base. But it just really was crushing my soul. Here I am in Nashville. I've got my guitar. I want to write songs. I love doing artwork. I went down to this art gallery called Take 121 Arts on 3rd Avenue South. This would have been in 2006, 2007. And I went in there, and the owner of the gallery, I told him I was an artist. He said, "Well, let me see some of your art sometime." Well, I'd already brought it all with me. So I went out, I was driving a little Mazda 3 at the time for the gas mileage, you know, and my car payment, you know. So I went out to my little Mazda 3. I had 40 pieces of art. I brought them all in, showed it to him. He gave me a show. And I took all those suits that I hated putting on every morning, all those ties, all those shirts, I threw them in a big trash can and burned them. And started that day, started chasing my dreams, 2007, and never looked back. Here I am 14 years later. We can get into some of the stuff that I've done, but, you know.
And there it is, chapter one of our story of Anthony Billups, the former Hananiga star pitcher, who went on to pitch his way through college. And right there we got into the accident that cost him his sight, only temporarily, but that's when he fell in love with playing the guitar and his artwork. And that led into the second chapter of Anthony Billups' life, which will be the next phase of this podcast. So this concludes chapter one. Check back here real soon for chapter two of Anthony Billups.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.